How did you transition from the military to leaving that to go into property?
When you're undervalued, it squashes you.
And you're buying properties, putting high rents, selling it to them. It's awesome. How much do you expect to make per month in the next 6 months?
I think by month six, we're going to be in excess of 20,000.
You're like one of the most hardworking people ever. How many deals have you sold in the last year?
In excess of 20. You have to be absolutely relentless and you really have to want it.
You operate as if you've been in the game 20 years.
But actually all of the risk factors involved I've been quite obsessed with.
Ross from the military transitioned into property, now making how much on average a month?
Well, over the last 30 days, I've earned £12,000.
And that's profit?
Profit. Well, I've got my offtakes are around 300.
Absolutely awesome. What do you mean, £300?
It's like your software and CRM. Okay. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
No offtakes. Fuel expenses, I suppose.
Did you think a year ago that you'd be able to make 12 grand in a month?
No. Absolutely not.
What were you making, if you don't mind me asking, in the military?
So my take home was £2,500 a month.
Okay. Wow. Which is an average salary. It's a decent salary. So tell me, Ross, how did you transition from the military to leaving that to go into property? What's your story? What happened? Because I know we're going to get a lot of gems, inspiration from this interview.
I was always trying to live a life that I couldn't afford. I was always, you know, my mother always said, you know, champagne lifestyle, lemonade wages. It was a bit of a running joke in the family. I didn't just sit down and complain about it. I did try things. I tried drop shipping, for example. That didn't work out for me. Believe it or not, during COVID, I actually imported a load of geodesic domes for COVID, so everyone could for corporate events, so everyone would have their own bubble. Mm. You know, I thought that could be something to jump on. I invested quite heavily into that. My dad and I used to travel around the Northeast setting up these domes. I ended up losing quite a lot of money on that as well. And then I was actually deployed in support of the Ukraine crisis. And during my downtime, I started watching YouTube videos, found Samuel Leeds, and from there I was hooked. It was actually one video in particular, which is why I chose you as a mentor, and it was actually the one where you were accused of being a fake guru.
Yeah.
And I remember watching that and thinking, what a difficult situation to be in. He was in your home, you know, he was calling you these things, and actually the way that you responded to that I thought was quite inspiring.
What was it about my response? Because if I remember, I just sort of absolutely destroyed him.
Yeah, well, it was just that the professional manner that you did it in.
Yeah.
You know, you could have quite easily lost your head, but I thought you handled it very well.
So that made you think, actually, maybe this... It's funny how, like, negativity, like someone coming into my house saying, you're a fake guru, challenging me, having all these questions, trying to do a hit piece on me, and then that kind of... people are, like, wanting to watch it because they're interested, but then it ends up people like you watching it and going, actually, and now we're working together and do deals together. Yeah. That's really interesting. So you tried lots of different things in the pursuit of making more money, and then you came down to my £1 crash course. Then what happened next?
I was hooked. We went down to London for a further educational training course. It was an all or nothing situation. I was all in. I was committed. I was prepared to sacrifice things for success, and I was, you know, I was desperately trying to leave the military at the time.
Why were you so desperate to leave the military?
Because after 17 years, I was undervalued, underpaid, really struggling to progress. I had a further 3 years to serve for a full pension. So if I had served the further 3 years, I would have left with a huge, you know, lump sum of money and then paid for the rest of my life. But actually, I couldn't even face the final 3 years.
Really?
I couldn't do it. Because when you're undervalued, it squashes you. And I couldn't stand it any longer. So I threw myself into the academy.
But then you did regret the decision.
I did. So I felt like I had an aptitude for it quite quickly. So I picked it up. I felt as though I knew what I was doing. Things were rolling well.
Picked up to it like a duck to water.
Yeah. I felt as though I was doing everything right.
Right.
You know, I became compliant. Started a website. Everything that I did was professional.
Yeah.
I was working for free in many regards, you know, making hundreds of phone calls, connecting with people, networking, following the training. And things weren't going my way, you know. So I called the academy and said, look, guys, I'm struggling. I had some motivational words and things did start to improve. Sometimes it's not about overanalyzing what you're doing. It is just a time thing. if you can gain people's trust in, you know, in the industry, then you're on for a winner. But sometimes it's a little bit of just serve your time.
How did you feel when you were doing everything that you were told to do and then it wasn't working and you weren't getting results?
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. But you've got the network to lean on. I mean, I've got hundreds of new friends. Hundreds of new friends created from the academy. We all lean on each other. And together, you end up finding what works. I think ultimately the key is finding a niche in the market, yeah, becoming a specialist.
Yeah.
You know, having that real understanding for what you're doing.
And I can't wait to delve into your niche, because you're like one of the most hardworking people ever. You're very militant in style. You'll take something, you'll run with it. And that's why I think you're so successful now. You've mastered, you know, BRR. You've mastered deal sourcing. You've mastered how to build relationships with estate agents. And that's why you're so successful. But I think it's very interesting, the transition and even the mental transition from you going from military to property. How was it transitioning?
It was tough. You have to be absolutely relentless and you really have to want it. I think joining the academy is one thing, but you really need to want.
Do you know when you had a call with Tony and you were saying, like, I think I want to quit this. I want my money back. I've changed my mind. What do you think would have happened if Tony had just been like, all right, no problem. See you later. Like, because Tony kicked your ass, didn't he?
He did. And that's exactly what I needed.
What did he say on the phone?
He asked me if I knew everything about property.
Right.
You know,
of course.
A bit of a rhetorical question.
Yeah, and I don't know anything about property.
And I said, well, no, of course not. He says, well, get a grip.
Wow.
Get a grip of yourself and push on, you know?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I needed to hear. And I really have grinded. I really have.
You have?
Relentless in.
How many deals have you sold in the last year?
In the last year, in excess of 20, I think 22.
And last month you sold 4, but how much are you charging on average for a fee?
Between 3,000 and 4,000.
That's what, all right, 12 grand. Yeah. But that's like a serious income.
Yeah.
And also you're buying houses yourself.
Yeah.
What have you got going on for yourself?
So I've used the money generated from deal sourcing to buy my own BRR.
Oh, you've bought it now?
Yeah. All right, complete today.
Completed today?
My dad's collecting the keys right now.
Oh, mate, congratulations.
Cheers, man.
I didn't even know that.
Yes.
And what, how much you pay for it?
So it's actually, I got it for 158. We're going to spend around 25 and GDV 220.
And you know your figures well, because it's bread and butter for you. It's what you do. So then once the refurb's done, you'll refinance it.
Well, actually, what I've done is I've actually bought this on a residential.
Okay.
And the plan is to live in it. If it's a flip, obviously the capital gains, you know, I'll save on capital gains if I've lived in the property.
Yeah.
So the flip is an option there. If not, with the equity I've built in the property, I can refinance on to buy to let.
It's a really good strategy, that, Ross, because you presumably you didn't put down a massive deposit.
No.
How much did you have to put down?
10% of the 10%. Of the 158, yeah.
So you buy it for 158, you only have to put down about 15, 16 grand,
yeah.
And then you're going to do it up with a refurb, and then you can either sell it and make a nice profit of 50 grand or something and pay zero tax, yeah, or get a new mortgage and get as you deposit back and go again.
Well, I've actually placed it on a tracker mortgage, which means there's no...
Oh, so you can refinance it straight away.
Yeah.
That's smart.
Yeah.
What is a tracker mortgage?
A tracker mortgage is where you're not fixed into a term.
Right.
So if for example, I chose a two-year fixed term, if I completed the refurb, let's say after 6 months and refinanced at that point,
mm-hmm,
I would be charged quite heavily for exiting the mortgage during that term.
Mm-hmm.
With a tracker, there's no early repayment charges, essentially. It's still a two-year term, but you've got the flexibility to remortgage, exit, you know, whatever you choose.
That's right. How did you go from not knowing loads about property or having any properties experience to now being one of the most trusted deal sources in the academy, having people ask your opinion on mortgages, fixed rate, trackers, refurbs? You're not just packaging and selling deals, you're project managing the process, you're connecting them with housing associations. Like, you operate as if you've been in the game 20 years, but you've only been in the game a year.
Yeah.
How have you done that so quickly?
I just think the guys that know me know that I'm quite intense, quite OCD in some ways in my approach.
Yeah.
And I don't ever advise or help on matters that I have no understanding of.
Yeah.
So I've spent an awful lot of time with commercial broker, an awful long time just sat with agents and law firms and really started to understand the market, you know. And interestingly, as I'm sure we'll touch on, you know, from private HMOs, looking at the comparison then to social housing HMOs, yes. And I found that quite interesting. You know?
We'll talk about that 100%.
But actually all of the risk factors involved I've been quite obsessed with. So showing a client a deal, but actually saying, well, look, here's some pinch points you may, you know, we need to address, and we need to get our ducks in a row before we progress to purchase. And
yeah.
I think you've got to really understand what you're getting into.
Yeah.
And I've got the respect for the client in that they're the ones investing hundreds of thousands of pounds, and it's my duty and responsibility to make sure that that's been done with limited risk.
Last month you sold 4 deals.
Yeah.
Who are the investors? Where do they come from?
So I would say at the moment it's about a 75-25% split between Academy and then just people who found me online.
Nice.
So 75% being your Academy members and 25% being...
And because they're on the Academy, they know that you're registered, you've got PIMS covering.
Yeah.
If there's any issues, we'll mediate. You've also got the familiarity where you see them every Monday, but also you're building your own brand.
Yeah.
What's the name of your company?
Auric Property.
So talk to me about, in the early days, some of the struggles mentally between... You know, because you've got people, you know, normal people that go into property, you've got friends and family and work colleagues. What are you doing? You must have had people saying, what, you're mad.
Yeah.
Especially when you're turning down a big pension. They're like, no, just play it safe. Yeah. Continue in a job, get your pension. What are you doing?
I mean, it was tough at home. I think my parents particularly could not understand the logic. You know, you've got your pension in 3 years. You know, they're trying to look after my future. It was a real bitter pill to swallow, but they did support me. They had their concerns, especially certainly friends. I know friends, one in particular, you know, instructed me to go and get a refund, and that I was being hard and that it was all a big scheme. I'll never forget that.
Did you believe it? Or did a part of you believe it?
Do you know what? I was worried. I did have my concerns. You should always be a little bit wary, but... There was something you said in one of the meetings, and it was sort of like 95% of Academy members achieve financial freedom. I was thinking, surely you can't lie about that. You know, like that was something that stood on me, 95%. And I really wanted financial freedom.
Yeah.
You know, and so I was all in. I think when you make the decision, you just need to go.
Yeah.
Commit. And yeah, you've always got that niggling feeling in the back of your mind, God, what if this doesn't work out?
When did you realise that actually this does work? You've not been had. There's no scammy, schemey. No, this is a legitimate property training course. It works. When did it click and you're like, this is actually...
I think selling the first deal. I think selling the first deal was like, wow. You know, seeing the money in the bank. But a lot of it you learn yourself because you have to implement your own systems and procedures and you have to have your own approach.
Yeah.
You know, you've taught me how to get into the business and you're there to help me moving forward. But I think you have to develop your own systems and be known for your own niche.
Yeah, be unique. Otherwise, if everyone's doing the exact same thing, you found your niche with housing associations, the Northeast, your area, you've got your way of doing things. How long did it take from deciding to go for it?
Yeah.
And going on the courses to selling your first deal?
So I think that was a little bit of a slow burn, and it was because I was juggling the military. So for the first 3 or 4 months, maybe 3.5 months, I was still in the military, and I found that very hard. And I think that's one of the challenges a lot of Academy members face is they've committed to the Academy, but they've got essentially now 2 jobs,
yeah.
You know, in a family and in a life. And it's really hard to get going, I think, whilst you're running the 2 jobs, you know, there's nothing you can do apart from graft.
Yeah.
And that's where you really need to want it.
Yeah.
But then eventually you can give one up and pursue.
Yeah.
You know.
And it is, especially, I mean, for some people that have got money, if you've got a few hundred thousand pounds and you join the Academy because you just want to learn how to invest it, that's a whole different story. But when you join the Academy and you're looking to do deal sourcing and rent to rents, and it's very active, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not passive. There's nothing passive about deal sourcing.
No. I think deal sourcing in particular, I mean, I've been engrossed in DealSource and I haven't looked at rent-to-rents. You know, really, I've been so laser-focused on DealSource and it does take a while. You know,
it does.
So, you know, to master your craft, it takes
a
while.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think in terms of time, I think it was around that sort of 3 months mark to sell a deal.
And when you sold that first deal, how did you feel?
A sigh of relief, really. A sigh of relief, and I hoped to build some momentum, and I did. I sold another one in short succession, so that was two, and yeah, really sort of pushed on from there.
When you sold your first deal, how long did it take before quitting the military? When and how did you decide to quit the military?
So it was sold in around the November time of last year, and I officially left the military on the 1st of January.
So about what, 6-7 months ago now.
Yeah. So from the 1st of January, so this year has been my property year.
How's life different now from a year ago?
Oh my God. I mean, last year, for example, out deployed, you know, in support of Ukraine, you know, and deployed and a real collar around my neck, quite sort of chained down. I mean, I'd missed 800 days of my daughter's life, you know, in terms of sacrifice. I was so committed. I was actually a loyal serviceman, and I wanted to stay in full term. I wanted the pension. That was what my life was about. I was a military man. Yet I was undervalued and underpaid. I was struggling to get promoted, and I was really quite, I suppose, hurt by that. You know, that was what I wanted to do. I loved the military, but when you're feeling squashed and you know, you just, for your own sanity, you need to do something where you've got that self worth, and I needed to have that feeling like I was successful.
When you first heard about deal selling, what were your thoughts initially?
Deal selling was not the one for me. When I first found out about deal selling.
When did you find out? How did it happen? Like, was it a course? Was it a YouTube video?
It was YouTube. It was YouTube. I remember watching the videos at the start and thinking, networking, building an investor list, compliance, social media. I just thought, no. You know, like, this. I think when you first start out deal sourcing, you think, well, hang on, I'm the advisor. So I'm advising and I'm also coordinating, and people are buying property based on what you tell them.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was, whoa, you know, surely not.
And you are right though. It is quite a big responsibility. You can't watch a YouTube video and then start selling loads of deals. You need to really know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you do. You need to be trained. I heard someone recently saying, you know, I might do what you're doing, deal sourcing, you know, pretty easy, you know, fast cash. And I'd sort of educate them on, really, it's actually a role of responsibility. You know, you need to take it serious.
Yeah.
And I think actually, although there's lots of deal sources out there, I feel as though I stand out in that.
Well, you invested a lot into education for a start. If you're getting on a plane and the pilot says, you know, I've not done any training, but I've watched some YouTube videos, you're going to be very afraid. And in the same way, you wouldn't put your life in the hands of an untrained pilot. Why should someone put their life savings into the hands of a deal sourcer that won't even invest £2,000 learning how to understand the foundations of the business? People won't. And you have, and you've worked extremely hard. How did you feel when you handed your notice into the military?
Great. It was a mixed feelings. Mixed feelings because it was a huge risk.
Yeah.
Huge risk. You know, I don't necessarily like living on the edge. I'm quite a safe person, really. I'm quite risk averse, and to do that was a really big deal for me. So I'm very proud of myself, but it was mixed feelings.
What do your family think of what you're doing now?
They're excited by it. You know, they're excited about it. My parents are actually sort of at that pension age where they're wondering what to do. That they've sat on an awful lot of equity. I've actually given them a bit of a pension plan.
Oh, wow.
You know, of how they can enjoy the rest of their life. And although they're hesitating a little bit, I think.
Why do you think people are so scared to leave their job and get into business or property investments? What do you think it is that makes people feel so hesitant? Because it took you had to be pushed over the edge, really, in the military. If the military had been just a little bit, if they'd have given you a small pay rise and given you a little bit more recognition, you'd have probably stayed there. So they just pushed you a little bit too much where you thought, you know what, I'm done.
That's it.
But why do you think people are so afraid to take that risk?
I suppose because it's huge sums of money. I think a lot of people aren't from money. So when you start gambling with huge sums of money,
yeah,
that makes them feel uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in an area that they're not educated on.
Yeah.
So I think the level of financial commitment sometimes can be the main reason of concern.
I guess it makes sense. And if your parents had a paycheck and their parents just had a monthly paycheck, it's against the grain, isn't it? To say, actually, I'm going to get into property and sell deals. What makes you unique as a deal sourcer?
I actually care. I really want to set someone up with an investment which is a success.
Yeah.
I don't just want to sell you a deal and walk away. Every single deal I sell, I'm involved with for 6 months. That's the level of commitment.
Because of the refurb and everything?
Because of the refurb and because I want to fill it with tenants. I want it to be a success.
Right.
So the vast majority of my deals are BRR.
Yeah.
So I'll introduce them to the build team. We'll go through the whole design and implementation phase, you know, the whole project management service that I offer. So I'm involved throughout the refurb. And then on the back end, I'm also helping with refinance and tenant management and things like this. I'm involved for quite some period of time.
Yeah. And Albert Einstein, he says, don't try and be successful, try and be valuable.
Yeah.
And then the success will follow. Do you think maybe some deal sources are just trying to make a quick buck? They're trying to sell as many deals as they can, but actually that's short-sighted, isn't it? Because if you're thinking about the longevity of your reputation and of your client base, if you've got a happy investor, they'll recommend you to all their friends. They'll buy from you again and again and again and again. And I think that's probably what you're doing. You're thinking about the long term.
Absolutely. And I think when you first introduce yourself to an investor, one of my first questions is, you know, what is your experience level? Because if you're dealing with someone who has never invested before, you naturally have to help more. You have to guide them more.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying, I would never take on the responsibility of it being a, I would never say this is a sure thing, this is a guarantee.
Yes.
However, I know if someone's done it before or they haven't, what level of involvement I'll have.
And there's also a time to walk away, isn't there? Like we've had many people that will say, actually, you know what? We don't think now's the right time because the investor's got completely unrealistic expectations. If they ask questions like, I am guaranteed to get all my money out. There's no guarantees. Yeah. The market might drop. Property might get downvalued. The definition of an investment, there's always an element of risk. Otherwise, it wouldn't be an investment.
Absolutely. And I never promise anything. But what I do is make them aware of the process.
What's your intention of, I know you just bought a BRR today. Congrats. What's your goal then within buying your own properties? Because I know you're using a lot of the money you're making from deal sourcing to pump into your own portfolio.
Yeah, so I suppose my skill set in social housing HMOs was noticed by a few angel investors.
Yes.
They're now funding two properties.
Oh, so you've got a couple more in the pipeline going through.
So we're actually buying it on a joint venture agreement.
Nice.
So 2 5-bed social housing HMO.
And congrats, because that's what we said at the ACPB.
Yeah, well, exactly. So Russell's advice was to get involved in some flips.
Yeah.
So I went off and that was the
nice.
That was the intention. But there's quite a unique element to this in that once we've finished the refurb and we've achieved a HMO license on the property, we've refurbed it to the right compliance level for social housing. We move the tenants in and have the lease signed, the long-term guaranteed rent lease. We can then sell the property based on a yield to a cash investor. So some overseas cash investors will buy property if it's got a fixed guarantee yield.
Yeah.
So we work backwards off a 10% yield and we can actually sell them at 168. £168,000 is what we can sell.
Right.
These 5-bed social housing HMOs for.
Because I guess to some extent it's like a bit like a commercial valuation.
It is. It's not a commercial valuation issued by your bank.
Yes.
But it's when you consider what overseas cash investors are looking for.
Yeah.
They're looking for a fixed yield and a nice strong yield. That's a 10% is a relatively strong yield. And we can make massive profits on flipping.
And from their perspective, a lot of these guys, they'll just buy cash. So it doesn't even matter if the bricks and mortar valuation is a little bit lower. Because they're just wanting a 10% yield, they're overseas, they're pumping money, they've got massive businesses, they're pumping it in, and you're buying properties, putting high rents, selling it to them, it's awesome.
We can get into one of these deals for £110,000 approximately, and sell at 168.
What about the refurb?
That's all in. So 110
is, okay, is including
all,
the roofer.
All associated costs, and then we can sell at 168, and there's no estate agent selling fees or anything like that. It's straight to the seller.
What is the moment you've been most proud of over the last year?
I think leaving full-time military. Leaving full-time military to pursue a life in property and actually becoming successful at it. And I'm actually very proud of my reputation.
Do you ever have to pinch yourself for how much money you're making now?
Yeah, but I hope this is just the start. I think £12,000 is a hell of an achievement, but actually the way that I'm forecasting the company is...
How much do you expect to make per month in the next 6 months?
I think by month six, we're going to be in excess of 20,000.
What's your experience been like? I know on the academy, you wanted to quit after a few months, and we told you not to, and you decided not to. Was that a good mistake? Was that a good thing? Was it a mistake? Are you glad you stuck with it?
The truth is, the academy has changed my life. There's no other way of saying it. There's no other way of saying it. My life has transformed because I joined the academy.
That's awesome.
You know, and I'm a much happier person. I've got a much more flexible life now. I see my daughter much more.
Yeah.
I earn more.
And you've helped your family. You helped your sister out.
Yeah, and I love what I do. You know, I've got a passion for it and I've got an aptitude for it and I'm doing something that I love.
Talk to me about your sister's deal, because that was quite powerful.
Yeah, so my sister lives in London, about half an hour's drive from here. And she was going through a bit of a rough time. I was down for some advanced training. I was here for the week. And we went into rent to rents together. We, you know, trained her up, told her how to do it. We made hundreds of phone calls throughout the week. We dealt with lots of failures, but together we secured a rent to rent in Chelsea.
Yeah.
And the feeling that gave my sister actually pulled her out of a bit of a hole actually, and filled her full of confidence, and actually doing it together was fantastic. It was a great experience.
But still, but the getting it.
But actually just the process. You know, and she got a real kick out of it, and it really sort of, like I say, pulled her out of a bit of a hole. And my sister and I are now looking to do things together. I mean, I've just started a management arm of the company. So I now do management. I've got lots of contractors on my books, and I'm actually filling these properties with. Essentially, it's an SA management company.
Well, mate, I'm so glad to see what you've done, and you grow as a person as well. It's just awesome. What would be your final piece of advice for somebody that's wanting to maybe transition from their job and get into property full time, get started, get on the ladder?
Yeah.
Best pieces of advice.
Best piece of advice is find a niche, work hard, master it, become a master of your craft, build your reputation, tell people what you're about and what you're doing. I am not a social media person by any means, but you have to use social media. The big difference between the companies that are doing well and maybe it's the people that are struggling a little bit, they're not actually telling people what they do. That's the big difference, is social media is so powerful. You know, tell people what you're doing and just keep going. Throw yourself into it as well. Really throw yourself into it. You've got to really want it.
That's awesome. Well, Ross, massive thank you for coming down to share today. And I wish you all the very best in the future and look forward to continuing working with you.
Thanks, Samuel.